All right. Got a little bit to get to in terms of state and local government contact points. Then we're going to go back to the Constitution for a little bit to describe the frame of government. Then we're going to get to the state legislature. And then once we finish with the state legislature, then we will have exam number two. All right. So we talked about this. We talked about the fact that the fifth general area of governmental relations between the state and the local governments was through welfare. It's the federalist system. So ultimately, it's the federal government that designs the policy, and then it leaves it down to the local government to provide the services. So think about health and human services, welfare, unemployment, things along those lines. Those are all delivered in a top-down sense. All right. Last little topic that we ran out of time for is how does the state check in with the municipalities? How do they hold them accountable? Well, there are several methods in which the state government imposes oversight upon the towns. The first is required reporting. Required reporting. This, of course, is the easiest one to do. Generally speaking, all towns must draft and send written accounts of what they do. And this includes every single department within the municipality. There are reports sent by the local health officers. You know, in Sutton, we actually have a town nurse. I know there aren't many towns that do so. Or the Board of Health. There are also records that are kept in terms of births and deaths and how long people lived. Reports are also sent from financial officers. Every single year, Sutton, as most towns, we publish what's called the town book. And it has a full accounting of every single dollar that was spent. Well, that report is also sent to the state. Why? Well, again, it's required by state law that all municipal action is basically documented and preserved. And by the way, as citizens, you all have the right to do a FOIA request, Freedom of Information. So if the town does generate a report and it's not published, you have a right as a citizen to go to the clerk's office and put in a request to obtain. Inspections. Yes, believe it or not, state officers actually go to towns and they inspect not only the different departments, but also individual departmental activity. On a small level, we had the last state officials came through were part of MassDOT, the Massachusetts Department of Transportation, and they went through our town and they inspected our culverts. Does anyone know what a culvert is? A culvert is like a place where a stream goes under a road. It's not a full bridge. Usually just like a gap that's opened up. Well, like a lot of towns, particularly in central and western Massachusetts, some of those culverts were built out of rock back when they were just, you know, horse and buggy paths. And then they were paved over. So obviously driving heavy equipment, you know, could cause a detrimental effect on those culverts. So the state comes out and inspects them. Because if they determine a roadway is not to be safe, they will shut it down. School, Department of actually it's DESE, right? The Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, that's the state ed department. They send inspectors down to local schools.
And they check out school activities. You know, there's police assessments. Anything
that your town does, there could be a state official in that town at any point. State agencies also provide advice and information that the towns can access. They provide, you know, suggested best practices for, say, hiring practices or firing how to fill out paperwork, how to properly do assessments. I'm just trying to think of random things. Ultimately, if there's a town and they're unsure of how to do something or how to follow a state mandate, I mean, it kind of makes sense that you're going to ask upwards. Just like if you have a job and you're out on the floor, you know, and you're told to do something, maybe you're not sure, so you ask questions, typically to a supervisor. Oh, I just thought of one. If there's a crime scene, I don't know if any of you are criminal justice majors, if there's a crime scene, the state runs the crime lab for analysis, because many of the municipalities can't afford to do that. So if there was, say, blood, you know, found at a crime scene, you know, they're going to send it off to the state to analyze it.
And they'll provide information as to, you know, whose blood it is or something along those lines. Money.
Just like the federal government compels the state to enact policies through funding, the state also compels the towns
to engage in activity with funding. Because ultimately, maintaining municipal services are hugely expensive. So, the most common two, or three,
that, you know, most towns deal with are Chapter 90 money. These are funds given for road improvements.
The state has a formula, and they redistribute money to all of the towns based on the total mileage of roads in that town. But of course, unfortunately, the money that they send out to the towns aren't enough to pave everything.
Because again, this is, whether you believe it or not, it's true. It costs about $300,000 per mile to adequately pave a road. So in Sutton, we have 112 miles of roads that are overseen by the town. Last year, we received about $800,000 in Chapter 90 money. But it's grant, and we utilize it to maintain the best we can. The state also gives Chapter 70 money.
This is money that's given to the town specifically for purposes related to maintaining public school systems.
Again, it's not enough to run a school system. I think we received about $6 million total.
We have a dwindling school population, but last I heard, I think our total school population of kids is about a little under 1,300.
So what good is $6 million going to do? You know, you can't educate 1,300 kids in this day and age on that amount of money. But it's supplemental. And why? Well, when we get this money, we have to follow state guidelines, state rules on how education is supposed to be run. And then there's the other money, the unrestricted general aid.
That's money that the state just gives us to do with whatever we want. But there are other grants as well. So maybe you are revitalizing a playground. You could apply to the state to get a park grant. Money specifically used for the improvement of parks. Or one of the things that Massachusetts in particular is going green, pushing solar. Well, the state has a program called the Green Communities Act. And states can apply for specific projects to help replace, you know, old systems with new, modern, more environmentally friendly systems. But of course, as I said, if the state gives you money, that means the state can control how you use it. With money comes control. But there is not a town out there that could run all of the services that its residents demand without state and federal aid. It's just not possible to do. The state also has the capacity to issue orders and impose regulations. For example, the town of Wales. Does anyone know where Wales is? Wales, Massachusetts? It's out near Brimfield on the Connecticut border. Town of Wales got itself into a little bit of trouble. It had a mobile home community, and those mobile homes, they did not have modern septic systems. Essentially, their poop was going into a local river. State found out about it, issued an order, environmental order, for the town to basically stop and to clean it up. And essentially, the Department of Environmental Affairs in Massachusetts compelled the town of Wales to take action. If any government agency issues an order to a municipality, they have to comply, whether they like it or not. Regulations, these of course are rules made by the different departments, and they can apply to anything ranging from accessing a building. You know, all government buildings have to be at equally accessible by people who are handicapped or disabled. Even if it destroys the nature of the structure. So for instance, Sutton, we have an old schoolhouse, which is one of the oldest schoolhouses left standing in the country. It was built when we were still a colony. And the Historical Society spent a whole ton of money and labor to restore the school. Well, the problem was is the doorway was 27 inches, which is not big enough to allow a wheelchair to enter. So they actually had to destroy the outside of the building and the inside of the entranceway to widen the doors.
Can't like certain historical things bypass accessibility guidelines like that?
No, unfortunately.
That's so weird. Well, because at my old school, it was like a really old school from the 1800s, and they had certain buildings that weren't ADA accessible. They were allowed to have them up because they were like historical buildings.
The problem is if you want to have it accessible to the general public, they have to be compliant.
So
you could close off a school building, and you know you could control the school population in terms of which students, which staff go to which building. But this is like a museum.
Yeah,
it had to be accessible.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So that was a regulation that came down, and you had to comply. All right, and the last, and this is the most dramatic one. Appointments and removals. In some states, state agencies literally have the ability to remove somebody that works in a municipal setting
and replace them with a state appointee.
I'll give you an example, and this happened, and I think it's still ongoing in Southbridge. I could be wrong, but the last I had heard, Southbridge was still, the school system was still run by the state. So they came in and they literally fired the entire administrative staff. They fired the superintendent, they fired the principals, and they replaced them all with state appointees to basically rebuild the Southbridge school system. They may have fixed the problem, but I don't know. But there are certain situations where the state can basically come in and take over. Particularly if the municipality is not following state guidelines, state regulations, state law. They also can make the rules for hiring. So in Massachusetts, if you want to be a superintendent, if you want to be a principal, you have to obtain certain licensure based on state standards. To become a police officer, to become a classroom teacher, to become a firefighter. Those are all state regulations that impact the hiring and the firing of staff. Even though usually it's the local government that ends up paying the salaries. All right, questions? I know it's not the most interesting stuff, but it's the way the government works. So one of the things I always get a chuckle out of, because again, I've been an elected official in my town for 15 years, is I always get a chuckle out of when they're like, oh, damn town hall. You know, it's all town hall's fault. Actually, truth be told, the men and women that actually work for your local governments, the actual town employees, all they're doing is following state and federal regulations. And even if they disagree with them, there's really not much they can do. Questions on anything from the last 2 days of class? All right, well, we got to back up in time. And we got to go back to the Constitution slide, because we ran out of time and I had to give you a test. And there's just some things that I want you to know about our government, state government, before we actually start talking about our state government, that can be found in the Constitution. Most in particular, the frame of government. The frame, meaning the design of the government itself. Our Constitution was one of the first documents that mapped out a government based on separation of powers, based on checks and balances, and clearly creating the authority of each of those branches. There are three separate departments, although today we would call them branches, but in the Constitution they're referred to as departments. There are the legislative department, there's the executive, and there is the judicial. Generally speaking, what's the job of the legislative branch? Make the laws. What's the job of the executive branch? Enforce the laws. What's the job of the judicial branch? To deal with issues under the law. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, oops. All right, well, there you go. There's all of them all at one time. I keep forgetting to fix this PowerPoint, and every time I hit it, I say the same damn thing. And I can't fix it because I'm not allowed to modify my own goddamn documents on this computer. All right. Legislatively speaking, the official description of our state legislature is as it has always been since the Charter of Massachusetts Bay was drafted. Our lawmaking body is called the General Court.
Actually, technically, it's the Great and General Court.
It is a gathering of representatives sent to work on the state government on behalf of the citizens of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. There are two chambers, as we will see. There is the House of Representatives, and there is the Senate. Each are similar but different. And we'll talk about those maybe later today, if not, definitely on Thursday. Generally speaking, according to the Commonwealth, or the Constitution of the Commonwealth, our state government, our state legislature, has four basic powers. Four basic powers. And Marcus already said one of them, to make the laws. Although, as it's phrased in the Constitution, the laws must be, and I quote, all manner of wholesome and reasonable. So duty number one of our state legislature is to make the laws for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Duty number two, to make the courts. It's the job of the legislative branch to design the makeup and the jurisdiction of our courts. Number three, it's the job of the legislature also to make all of the state officers that are not elected. So all of the civil officers that work for the state, it's all those positions are all created by law, all by the legislative branch. So our state legislature could basically erase them if they wanted to. And lastly, how do you pay for government?
Taxes.
The fourth duty of our legislature is to impose taxes. Solely for the purposes of operating the state government. Did you get all four? To make laws, to make the courts, to make the officers, or offices, and to pay for it all, taxes. All right, moving on. The executive branch. The executive branch today is very different from what it was when the Constitution was enacted. The reason being is our legislature has made laws that has expanded the size of the executive branch. The vast majority of government employees fall under the control of the executive branch. At the tippity top are two officers. What are they called? Who's the chief executive officer of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? The governor. And who's directly next to the governor and helping the governor faithfully execute the laws of the Commonwealth? The number two. No idea? The lieutenant governor. We don't call him the vice or her. The vice governor, we call her the lieutenant governor. Massachusetts, though, is very unique in that also within our executive branch is something that I think only one other state has. an elected executive council. Originally, these nine members were selected by the general court. But today, they are elected directly by the people. We will get into the job of the executive council when we cover the executive branch for our third exam. But to make it very simple, things like pardons or the commutation of sentences or judicial appointments, those are actually done not by the governor, but rather they are approved by the executive council. Why? Well, just like John Adams, when he made the general court put two chambers in so they could check and balance one another, it would be stupid if we were to allow our governor to be a tyrant. They fought a revolution against the king. So the whole idea of the governor's council was essentially to check and balance the governor. The executive branch today is also made up of a series of appointees that are made by the legislature. Originally, a lot of our current executive officers were legislative appointees. So like the Secretary of State, the Treasurer, the Attorney General, those were all appointed by the legislature. Of course, today our Constitution has been amended, and now we, the people, elect them in. But interestingly enough, the ranking officers in the National Guard, those are actually appointed by the legislature today. Still. Out of the fear of the founding fathers of military tyranny, they wanted to make sure that the military was kept under civilian authority. And the Constitution also provides for executive appointments. These are appointments that the governor makes that are given with the advice and consent of the executive council. These at the time included the Solicitor General, who was the top lawyer from Massachusetts, the sheriffs, the coroners, the state coroners, the registers of probate. Those were all originally appointed by the governor. Today it's very different, and we'll cover those. But in the Constitution itself, it was clear. They wanted to make sure there were checks and balances. So if the legislature made an appointment, that meant the legislature was in charge of making sure, overseeing, that that person fulfilled their duties. And if not, they could be removed. Questions? As far as the judicial power, our Constitution did call for the creation of state courts. But our Constitution, in fact, only created one, and that was the Supreme Judicial Court, the SJC. The SJC is the state's top court. It's our Supreme Court. But all of the other courts were to be created by the legislature. But our Constitution did include a couple of other things that also influenced the U.S. Constitution. All appointments to the courts are to be made by the executive branch, not the legislative branch. Although in Massachusetts, the executive nominates a judge and the executive council appoints. in case you were not aware, in the U.S. Constitution, the president nominates, but it's the Senate that ultimately appoints. The other interesting nugget that was in our Constitution that carried over, lifetime appointments, sometimes called good behavior tenure. Our Constitution states that all judges shall hold their offices subject to review of good behavior. Although, in Massachusetts, our Constitution has been amended. Today, judges cannot serve beyond their 70th birthday. You can be a judge in Massachusetts up to your 69 years and 364 days old. But the moment that 365 rolls around, you lose your job. You are forcibly retired by operation of law. Questions? Lastly, and this is key, our state constitution clearly states that individuals cannot hold multiple positions within the government. You cannot be a state senator and a trial judge. You cannot be the lieutenant governor and a member of the House of Representatives. No, you are compelled by the Constitution to serve one position. Why? If someone can multitask, why not let them multitask? Why hold and make them force someone only have one position? That's just it. If you're a powerful member of the House and suddenly you're also in the executive branch, you could use your undue influence and pressure the decisions of two different branches of government. Well stated, well stated. All right, questions? All right. Now, what about our Constitution today? Well, still, we're operating under the same Constitution. But you've looked through it. And hopefully you noticed that there are many of the articles of the Constitution that have been amended. Our Constitution is still in place because, by design, it can change by the times, or change with the times. That doesn't mean necessarily it's a living, breathing document. No, it's simply amendable. And it has been amended 120 times. Why? Well, as time went on, the people or the state government felt that changes needed to be enacted. And each of the amendments was passed for different reasons. For example, take the 48th Amendment, or as it's labeled, Article 48. That amendment states that in Massachusetts, the power of government rests in the people. And it asserts that people have the right to pass laws or even amendments to the Constitution right over the heads of their elected representatives. This is how we're able to do ballot questions. Why? Because there was a time when people felt that the state government was completely corrupt
and not serving the needs of the people. So the people got together, forced the representatives to allow them to pass law or change the Constitution themselves. Now, by the way, Article 48 is long. It's one of the longest amendments in the Constitution. And it's very complicated. But I suggest you read it, because we are, when we get to elections, we're going to talk about ballot questions and how they work in Massachusetts. So kind of file it under the at some point. TBD is when to do it. All right. How does it work? Well, it's very different than what's in the U.S. Constitution. In the U.S. Constitution, it takes 2/3 of the members of both chambers of Congress to propose an amendment, and it takes 3/4 of the states to ratify. That's the reason why the U.S. Constitution has only been amended 27 times. It's very, 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 very difficult to do. Our Constitution, not quite as complicated. Obviously, we've done it 120 times. And by the way, from what I've heard, and I don't know what changes are looming, but our next state election, I heard, and I could be wrong, I think there are 2 amendments that have been added to the ballot. We're going to have like 40 ballot questions from what I heard. So you may have the ability to actually vote on an amendment to our Constitution. All right. How do we amend our Constitution? Well, according to the Constitution of the Commonwealth, today there are 3 ways. The most commonly one used is known as a legislative amendment. A legislative amendment. Why is it called a legislative amendment? Guess where it comes from. It's in the name. It's a proposal that comes from the general court. Now, it is drafted like a normal piece of legislation. And we are going to review how a bill becomes a law in Massachusetts. Amending the Constitution goes through the same method. Except once it is approved by a majority in both chambers, it is then held until after the next state elections. So it could take up to 4 years for an amendment to be approved. So let's say that it's 2025, October. The state Senate, the state House of Representatives approves an amendment. It cannot be touched until the next, after the next election, which is scheduled in November of 26. But the winners of this next state election are not going to take office until January 27. So if the state legislature was to approve an amendment today, it gotta be voted on again in 2027. If the newly elected state legislature approves it, it doesn't go to the governor. It goes to the Attorney General, AG.
And if the Attorney General determines it to be constitutional, it then goes to the Secretary of State, who puts it into effect. And then guess what happens? The people vote. Since the ratification of Article 48, the people have had presented to them every subsequent amendment. So what happens if the people reject it? The Constitution is not amended. But if the people approve it, it's amended. Questions? The second type of amendment is known as an initiative amendment. An initiative amendment. This is a measure that originates with the people. So this means it's going to be on the ballot. So, election time, November, in the year 2026. This ballot question gets voted on by the people. It then goes to the next general court, which starts up, as we said, January of 27. Unlike a legislative amendment, which requires two majorities, ready for this one? You need 25% of the vote in the very next session of the general court. Then it needs to be tabled for the next general court, which starts in January of 29. If the general court approves it a second time, it goes back to the AG, then back to the Secretary of State, and then the people vote on it a second time. Why am I showing you this? For an initiative amendment, you're talking, it could take a decade for something to pass. For a legislative amendment, it could take 5-6 years for it to pass. Why? Why did they make it so complicated?
Well, they probably didn't want it like being changed all the time so easily, because that makes for like an inconsistent government.
What is one of the biggest flaws with human beings in general? Are they stoics? Do they sit back and ponder every possible outcome of every possible action and think about alternatives?
Not most of the time.
No, what do people have a tendency to do? Yeah, to be impulsive, to be reactive, to be emotional, often driven by irrationality. I told you, the Founding Fathers despised the idea of democracy. because they feared the people, because they knew that all people are flawed. So this cools the emotion down. If something really needs to change, it will change. But you didn't want those impulsive, you know, fly-by-night changes that may be popular in a moment. But, you know, 2 years down the road, the trend ends and, you know, nobody cares anymore. Case in point, Britney Spears. I remember back when I started teaching middle school, she was one of the most popular music artists of her day. Spice Girls, NSYNC, all of these other pop bands. They were huge. They were everywhere. Only to see their careers fizzle out in 2 or 4 or 5 years later. Why? Well, because we as people, we get bored. And we move on to the next thing. So if we were allowed our government to change just on the whim, as Marcus said, we would have chaos. We'd have instability. So they intentionally made it complicated to ensure that if change did occur, it was the right change. It was necessary. All right, the last way to change it, and it actually states in our Constitution, the towns have a right to call for a constitutional convention, just like they did in 1779. When they made the Constitution itself. It literally establishes the procedure in the first sentence of the preamble, which we've already read. You know, government is instituted for the common good, for the protection, the safety, the posterity, and the happiness of the people, and not for the profit, honor, or private interest of any one man, family, or class of men. Therefore, the people alone have an incontestable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to institute their government and to reform, alter, and totally change the same when their protection, safety, posterity, and happiness require it. If a majority of the towns were to put forth a call for a constitutional convention, that convention could not be controlled by the state legislature. But it would have the power to make any constitutional amendment proposals so desired by the people. And interestingly enough, if they wanted to, they could scrap the Constitution and make a whole new one. But this has not happened in the history of our state. That's one of the reasons why we're still operating under the same Constitution. Questions? One last little interesting factoid about our Constitution, which just goes to prove how brilliant John Adams was and how brilliant the men of his day were. The last article in the state Constitution closes with a requirement that the voters, 15 years from when it was ratified, vote again on the Constitution. And if 2/3 of the voters were in favor of it, there would be an automatic calling of a constitutional convention. Interestingly enough, it was that 2/3 that saved our frame of government. Because when the vote occurred in 1795, a majority of people, a slim majority, but a majority of voters voted to scrap the Constitution and go back to the drawing board. But it was short of the 2/3 required. So, but for that, we would have had another constitution.
Questions?
All right, this probably should be in the judicial branch, but I have it in here, so we'll cover it before I move on.
And let's talk about the nature of laws.
It is long said that in our country, we are a government of laws, not of men. We don't have a hereditary ruling class, where people, just because of the family they are born into, have noble status, automatically allowing them to be born into positions. Instead, the government is controlled by laws adopted with the consent of the people and enacted by elected representatives who are, as we know, held accountable at all times by the people. But there's a hierarchy. Some laws have more authority than others. To put it another way, all laws are not equal.
The highest legal source in our country is the Constitution of the United States of America.
No branch of the U.S. government, no U.S. government agency, no branch of a state government, no state agency has the authority to violate the Constitution of the United States. It literally is the supreme law of the land, as stated in the Supremacy Clause. But it is not an all-encompassing document. Meaning, all of the laws of the country are not found in the Constitution. No. The purpose of the United States Constitution was to give the U.S. government certain limited powers. And everything else was to be left to the states or the people. That's literally what it says in the 10th Amendment. So, regulating interstate commerce, as we said previously, that's a federal power. Regulating curriculum in schools, that's a state power. And speaking of state powers, broadly speaking, there are five areas that state law has jurisdiction, no control over. So these are the laws that apply to us, those people who live in Massachusetts.
Begins with the Constitution of the Commonwealth. I kid you not. I don't know if I told you this story, but a few years ago, there was a resident in our town that wanted to amend our bylaws to change our town meeting. In the rules of our town meeting, as stated in Sutton's bylaws, all it takes is the presence of the moderator, the majority of the Board of Selectmen, and the majority of the Finance and Warrant Advisory Committee to be present to have a town meeting. Well, this resident wanted there to be a quorum, a set minimum number of 100 people present to have a town meeting. And her argument was essentially that the people were uninformed and they should be forced to go to town meeting and participate on local matters. Well, when this resident presented that to us, my counter was what it said in the Constitution of the Commonwealth. It's not the duty of the town government to inform the residents of what is going on in town. No, it's the exact opposite. It's the duty of the people, as stated in our Constitution, to be informed, to take the time to be knowledgeable of, to think frequently and speak about politics and town government matters. I was one of the people that helped squash that proposal. Because my fear was that with the general apathy about local government, we would never have quorums and we would never be able to get town business done. Well, all I did was quote back concepts contained in our Constitution. It's we the people that should be in charge. We the people have the duty to know this stuff, to learn, to read it for ourselves. Just below the legal authority of the Constitution are the statutes. Not statute, statutes. These are the laws that are passed through the legislative process. How a bill becomes a law. There are thousands of statutes that have been passed in Massachusetts since 1780. And here's the kicker. All of those laws must conform to the Constitution of the Commonwealth. And by the way, it does say in the Constitution of the Commonwealth that nothing in the state can go against the rules established in the Constitution of the United States. Our government is framed based on the hierarchy. And by the way, it's the same as true in every single state. Now, FYI, in our state, our code of laws are sometimes referred to as the general laws. But more specifically, you can find them by looking up the MGLs, the Massachusetts General Law. And by the way, our whole legal code is online. You can go on to massachusetts.gov and you can look up all of the laws in our state. You yourself literally have the ability, without having to go to a library, can figure out the thou shalls and the thou shall nots in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It's a golden age, that's for sure. Why? Well, since 1922, when state law mandated that all these laws be printed, they were printed in encyclopedia-like volumes. So if you ever watch like a docudrama that's like involves the law, you'll see the lawyer in their office and there's all the law books behind them. When I went to law school, I originally dreamed of having something like that until I realized, oh, all the laws are just a click away. So now here's my law library on my phone, as it could be yours. Now, here's the interesting thing. Our laws are not intended to be carved in stone. No. When you read the language of our general laws, usually there's references to the laws continuing. Meaning, there's a recognition that, you know, as times change, the laws are going to change. But, of course, all of the changes have to go through the legislative process. And again, we're not going to do the Schoolhouse Rocks, I'm just a bill. But we'll go something similar, do something similar. And here's another important concept. Our laws state they're to be applied in general. Meaning, it doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter who you think you are. Doesn't matter what you think of yourself when you look in the mirror. Doesn't care about your politics, your religion, nothing. If there is a law that says you cannot, you cannot. They are applied equally.
Questions? And one last thought.
The law is the law is the law until the law is either amended or nullified by another law. So if the legislature passed the law in 1870 and it's still on the books, it still applies today.
One of the weirdest laws that one of my professors had me read back in the day, although it has since been nullified, there was a law on the books in Massachusetts as late as like 1990. When did I have coins class? It might have been 91.
Took a constitutional law class, and our professor had us go down to the library. We had to go through all the books and find wacky laws. And I actually found a law that in Massachusetts was once a legal requirement that you had to bring a long gun with you, carry it on Sundays at all times, especially if you went to church. That law had been in place since colonial times, but it had never been repealed. So the irony was, is if you didn't go to church with a long rifle, you'd be in violation of the law. You could be subject to arrest or fine. But the state legislature appealed that in like the mid-90s.
Oh, another wacky law. Did you know you were not allowed to buy alcohol in Massachusetts on Sundays?
Back when I was your age, the only things that could be open on Sundays were hospitals, restaurants, and gas stations. You could not go to Walmart. You could not go to Target. You could not shop. No grocery shopping. Nope, 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 nope. You had to do all of that 6 days a week.
But the law changed.
Now, the other types of laws that you may stumble upon are referred to as special acts.
These are typically resolutions that don't apply to every single one in the Commonwealth. In fact, the vast majority of special acts are laws that are approved that only apply to an individual town. I got one passed. I actually got a law passed for Massachusetts. In the town of Sutton, if you own a house and you are called to active duty in any branch of military service, Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, Space Force, National Guard, doesn't matter. If you are called to active duty and you're deployed overseas, the town of Sutton will pay your property taxes while you are servicing the country.
Why did I do it? Well, as the son and grandson and father of a veteran, veterans, I felt it's only makes sense. You know, that taxpayers help out any man or woman who gets called overseas to serve our country. You know how long it took me? 6 years. I went up to the legislature 3 times and lobbied on behalf of my special act. But eventually, My perseverance paid off, and it was enacted. So now in town hall, they actually took the signed copy that was signed by the governor, by the Speaker of the House and the Senate President, and then we actually have it framed up in the town manager's office. Because I'm pretty proud of that.
But that law only applies to residents of Sutton. So if you live in Douglas or Whitensville or Grafton, sorry, doesn't apply to you. Questions? All right. Below The state constitutions and authority are the individual town charters or city charters. These are the local constitutions. And this is a third set of laws that are applicable to everybody in a particular town. So, for instance, while we are in Worcester, we are subject to any ordinances that may be on the books. So let's say, for instance, you go to the center of the city and you don't put money in the meter and you get a parking ticket. Well, those rates are determined by the city. Or maybe it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you're driving through the city and your favorite song comes on the radio and it's a nice summer night. So you blast your radio up to 11 and the cop pulls you over for violating the city's noise ordinance. Or you have a dog and you decide to take your dog for a walk in the park and you don't pick up after yourself. And a city employee sees you and gives you a fine. Well, all of those are determined by statutes that are passed under the town or the city charter. Ultimately, it also sets up the frame of government. We're going to talk about the different frames of town and city governments when we get to the final exam. So if you live in a city, chances are you have a city council and you have a mayor. Well, that's outlined in your city charter. If you live in a town, you may have a board of selectmen or a select board, maybe 3 or 5 members. There may be a town manager. There may be a town administrator. I don't know. There may be a school committee. You know, all of that is contained in your town charter. And the local governments also pass regulations. If you live in a town, they're called bylaws. If you live in a city, they're called ordinances. Same basic thing. Those are the statutory regulations that apply to the jurisdiction of the municipality. So, if you violate a city ordinance, it cannot be imposed upon you if you live in the town of Medway. Actually, I think Medway is a city. I don't remember. And lastly, there are rules and regulations that the state can pass, that the towns can pass, that the government agencies can pass, and they're applicable to all. So, you want to qualify to take your boat to the local boat ramp and put it into a town pond? Well, you have to follow all the rules that the town establishes. So, for example, in Sutton, if you're going to go to Manchog Pond and you're going to bring your boat in to go fishing, well, it's required that you pay $25 and you put the payment either by using the little QR code, you pay online, or there's a collection box for you to drop a check in or to put cash in. If you do not, our town police, which has a police boat, will come out and find you. And they will require that you go to shore, and then you'll have to pay a fine of $100 for failing to pay the $25 to put your boat in the water. Questions. All right, when we come back on Thursday, we're going to start the Great and General Court. We're going to talk about the state legislature, the different positions that are in there, and we're also going to talk about the legislative process. Once we get through that, we're going to have our second exam. It's going to be less information than the first exam, and it might be a little shorter of a test. But we got to get the second exam in. I was hoping to get it in before midterms. I just don't think I'm going to. Papers. Oh, I could talk about papers. I forgot to add that to Blackboard. I got to add the Dropbox. Your papers are due at the end of, or the beginning of December. I forgot what the date is. Probably like December 1st or something like that. I don't know. It's on my website.
Your papers count as 20% of your final grade. As I said on day one, I don't grade your papers like I'm an English professor, because I'm not. Your paper is going to be graded based on your ability to follow directions. All of the directions can be found on proflamanic.com in the paper section. The basic criteria of this assignment is that you are writing a fact-based paper about something directly related to state government or local government. If you are going to write a paper that's based on opinion, you will be penalized heavily. If you don't cite your sources, you will be penalized. If you have a whole bunch of grammatical mistakes in there, you'll be penalized, but not in a crippling manner. I think the most significant penalty is like minus 15 points. But ultimately, if you check it out, you will see down at the bottom, I'm telling you everything that you will lose points for and how much points you will lose. And if at the end of the day you do not follow the directions, even if it's a brilliantly written paper, you could walk away with a failing grade. And I don't really fudge too far from that. Because I don't want to judge whether I like your paper or not. I don't want to judge whether I agree with what you are writing or not. I've made it as objective as possible. So, did you follow the directions? Is the word count correct? Check. You know, do you have the right amount of sources? Check. Did you use footnotes? Check. Those are all the things that I'm going to look at. And don't get me wrong, I will read your paper. But just because I like what you say, or I like how you say it, doesn't mean you're going to get a good grade. You will be allowed to drop those papers in as soon as I get the drop box off. If you get it in by the middle of November, I'll put a date, like, say, I don't know, November 10th, something like that. I will add 5 points to your paper. I'll incentivize you getting it in early. Any questions about the paper? Make sure you go over that, and if you do have any questions, bring it to me in class. All right, there's nothing else. I'll leave it there, chief.